in the second recording about outcome six, I wonder what was going through your mind when I mentioned causing children to sin. Orphaned girls, who are easy targets for sexual exploitation. Orphaned boys, who often turn to crime, drugs, and are prone to become abusive in adult relationships. What about the 300,000 children, many as young as 10 years of age, who are currently participating as child soldiers in armed conflicts around the world? Suicide bombers as young as 10 years of age? Or perhaps you thought about the Dalits in India, the so-called untouchables, where more than 250 million Dalits are denied their basic human rights and dignity. There are more than 40 million child labourers in India. But it's not just poor children who are at risk. All children are at risk. Millions are at risk from poverty, but millions are also at risk from prosperity. As Lewis Bush so aptly puts it, many children and young people today have everything to live with, but nothing to live for. Now, returning to the text, I'm sure the disciples agreed with Jesus, they would never hurt children. But what about the sins of omission? Children can simply be looked upon as unimportant, second rate. Verse 10 says, "See that you do not despise one of these little ones, for I tell you that in heaven their angels always see the face of my Father who is in heaven." It seems children have representative angels in heaven, and therefore they should not be looked down upon or treated as if they're unimportant. I wonder how the disciples felt at the end of this discourse, especially as this was all in response to their question, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom?" How should we be feeling right now? Soon after this, Pharisees came to test him in Matthew 19, verse 3. This time on the very serious matter of divorce. But in the crowd were mothers and their children. And 19:13 says, "Then children were brought to him that he might lay his hands on them and pray." The disciples, who it seems had a very short memory, given the fact that the incident with the little boy should have still been fresh in their memories, immediately stepped in to prevent the interruption to what important adults were discussing. Can you hear their thoughts? There he goes again with kids. Doesn't he realize the power and prestige of the men around him? This is a moment of high influence. Does it perhaps bring to mind the times you've heard things like, "Oh, he's only a child, he won't understand," or "She's only a child, this is adult stuff we are dealing with," or "You can't entrust that to him, he's only 8 years old." Well, as we saw in the previously, God used several children in the Bible to accomplish his purposes in the Bible. Imagine how the children felt when the disciples tried to turn them away. Hurt, rejected, disappointed. But Mark 10:14 says that Jesus was indignant. And Matthew 19:14 says, "Let the little children come to me and don't hinder them, for to such belongs the kingdom of heaven." In other words, don't you dare hinder them from coming. Imagine how the children felt now. They realized that this obviously in charge adult was defending and protecting them, scolding adults on their behalf. They must have rushed forward now, one by one, feeling the wonderful embrace of Jesus' arms. How should this story affect the church? A person's life is shaped between the ages of 4 and 14. It is during those years that lifelong habits, values, and beliefs and attitudes are formed. As we saw earlier, most people who are born again make their decision while they're children. So what should the church be doing? Well, in his wonderful book, Child, Church, and Mission, the late Dan Brewster suggests the following. Teach them the word of God. Make disciples of children. Regularly support them in prayer. Create opportunities for children to participate in ministry. Offer child-friendly church facilities. Provide qualified children's teachers, age-graded classes and curricula. Engage in family equipping and preparation. Protect children from harmful traditions. Conduct worship services that are meaningful to children. Conduct elders' meetings and annual church programs, the agendas of which should include matters relating to children and how to improve the church's ministry to children. Formulate budgets which provide funds for significant child ministries. Emphasize rituals, Christmas, Easter, other special days, birthdays, Sunday school graduations, anniversaries, and remembrances, and make them a big deal for the children. Also, the church should have designated days and times to bless children in its annual program. Encourage the pastor to be a regular visitor to the children's ministry and to know many of the children by name. Insist on purity among leaders. Look at children's potential, not just their current behavior. Support the child's family. Have regular family together activities. Train the staff in child protection. Seek to have trained people to help children that have been abused, mistreated, or on the streets. So what's our conclusion? I'm absolutely convinced that somewhere in the history of the church, it lost the emphasis that Jesus and the Bible places on children and youth, and that if the church refocuses on them without abandoning its focus on the adults, the kingdom will advance in a much more rapid way, and the future of the world's children will be a lot rosier than it is today.